The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. Today, no war has been declared. And however fierce the struggle may be, it may never be declared in the traditional fashion. Our way of life is under attack. Those who make themselves our enemy are advancing around the globe. The survival of our friends is in danger. And yet no war has been declared. No borders have been crossed by marching troops. No missiles have been fired. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed.
And the monolithic and ruthless conspiracy killed that guy and his brother, but maybe you've heard that guy's nephew is running for president in 2024. Welcome back to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Friday, June 30th, 2023 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. So in the first hour, as a sort of nod to Richard in New York's bizarre call yesterday, I mentioned somewhat glibly the Supreme Court ruling yesterday, the decision on affirmative action, the 6-3 decision, the ruling that race-based affirmative action in college admissions violates the 14th Amendment. And I said we are all equal opportunity slaves under the 14th Amendment, basically. And so I was unpacking that a little bit. I'll finish that thought. Most people don't understand, you know, we have these presumptions in America. We don't understand, as we see things trending in a feudalist direction, one of the best, clearest illustrations of that is, there are a variety of things. There is the continuity of government impulse that has been accomplished under the multi-jurisdictional directives. That's interesting. It's interesting the kind of training that law enforcement personnel go through. The gear that they have is military. It's literally military. The DOD 1033 program, for example, gives law enforcement military hardware. Why is that? What is the job of the military? To suppress threats, basically to kill the enemy. And police are supposed to be historically peace officers. But remember, Alan Watt reminded us every once in a while you see the signs of transition, and there's a reason that the uniforms went from blue to black. So we have our own black shirts and brown shirts here in America, right out in plain sight. We just aren't noticing. And so it's interesting, the schizophrenic slogan, back the blue, there are no more blue uniforms. So why are we saying back the blue? And, you know, that's a deeper, nuanced issue. Not to get in, I'm not trying to cast aspersions on law enforcement. They do a very tough job and are under recognized, especially in this day and age. But most of the threats that we face, I would say, are manufactured. That's, you know, a la Trevor Aronson's 2015 TED Talk, how this FBI strategy is actually creating U.S.-based terrorists. If you're not familiar, go watch it. 5 minutes, we play that from time to time, which is absolutely amazing. He wrote a book, The Terror Factory, based on how the FBI has been orchestrating synthetic strategy of tension episodes. And to my knowledge, he hasn't been sued or forced to recant his position in any way. In fact, he was on CBS with a former FBI official, and nothing that he wrote was challenged. So, back to this issue of the 14th Amendment and the creation, the codification of the administrative slave state for the general citizenry. So Senator Pat McCarran said, and most people don't realize, you know, backing up McCarran on the Senate floor, he was the Senate Judiciary Chairman at the time. He said on the Senate floor, as the Senate was passing Senate Bill 7, which became the Administrative Procedure Act, in 1946, McCarran said, "We have set up a fourth order in the tripartite plan of government, which was initiated by the founding fathers of our democracy. They set up the executive, the legislative, and judicial branches, but since that time, we have set up a fourth dimension, if I may so term it, which is now popularly known as administrative in nature." So he clarifies, he said, we have the legislative, the executive, the judicial, and the administrative. If you ask young people how many branches of government are there, most of them are hard-pressed to say three: executive, legislative, judicial. And I dare say that you couldn't find one in, you know, 10,000 that could name all four. But there has been a conversion, and like I said in the first hour, for example, Justia, the law resource, used to have an entire section. Maybe they still do, and it's just hidden somewhere, but they used to have it out in plain sight, an administrative law section. What you will find now is that the predominating body of law that students study in law school is administrative in nature. It's basically exclusive at this point. We've entirely lost our history in just maybe two or three short generations as far as that's concerned. So back to McCarran, he also said, "This is not a government of men, it is a government of law. And this law is a thing which every day from its enactment," Senate Bill 7, the Administrative Procedure Act, "this law is a thing which every day from its enactment until the end of time, so far as this government is concerned, will touch every citizen of the republic." So we have the Bill of Rights, right? The first 10 amendments to the Constitution. Listen to this. He further said, Senate Bill 7, the Administrative Procedure Act, "the purpose of which is to improve the administration of justice by prescribing fair administrative procedure." Does that sound like gobbledygook? One of the things Ralph Winterrode reminded us of on the regular was that the Federal Register, which no one knows about, they publish things there. The agencies promulgate substantive rules of conduct presumed to have the force and effect of law. Does that sound like, you know, sophistry to you? It sure does to me. What does all of that mean? It means that it's, you know, through the looking glass down the rabbit hole. That's what it is. So the Administrative Procedure Act, the purpose of which is to improve the administration of justice by prescribing fair administrative procedure, is a Bill of Rights, he said. And I don't think he was being hyperbolic. So, Senate Bill 7, the Administrative Procedure Act, is a Bill of Rights for the hundreds of thousands of Americans whose affairs are controlled in one way or another by agencies of the federal government. It is designed to provide guarantees of due process and administrative procedure. So I ask you, what touches the citizen, as McCarran put it, in today's America? Is it the White House? Is it the Supreme Court? Is it, you know, Congress, the House and Senate? Or is it DHS and FEMA and you know, all those new IRS agents, the armed, all these armed federal agents? I think the answer is, it's a rhetorical question. So McCarran said, it touches every phase and form of human activity, and it deals with that which at the opening of my statement I described as the fourth dimension or fourth branch of our democracy. In other words, by the Constitution, the executive, the legislative, and judicial branches of our government were set up, but now we have a fourth branch, the administrative form of our government. Was this guy just whacked out, this Senate Judiciary Chairman? And then citing the 1937 President's Committee on Administrative Management report, which is another interesting read, another interesting companion through the FDR years in particular, the hijinks is sort of laid bare. McCarran further stated the independent administrative agencies of the federal government have been said to constitute a headless fourth branch of the government, a haphazard deposit of irresponsible agencies and uncoordinated powers whose institution does violence to the basic theory of the American Constitution that there should be three major branches of the government and only three. And so, you know, like I said, companions to this discussion are Pistrito's The Birth of the Administrative State, Where It Came From and What It Means for Limited Government. He cites Gary Lawson's The Rise and Rise of the Administrative State, published in the Harvard Law Review back in 1994, volume 107, number 6. And then, of course, James P. Hill's The Third House. What's the third house? Third House of Congress versus the fourth branch of government. What's the fourth branch of government? The Impact of Congressional Committee Staff on Agency Regulatory Decision-Making. And Hill makes a very interesting and provocative point that, the way he put it, by largely ignoring the significant role that Congressional Committee Staff members play in influencing the process and product of regulatory decision-making, reformers proposing formal changes, you know, like vote the rascals out, in the rulemaking process, risk overlooking the need for simultaneous exploration of informal reforms. In other words, these entrenched staffers, committee staff, agency staff, are the folks who are the boots on the ground in the sausage making, and they are there through administration to administration. And it's as important to look at those folks as anything. Anyway, I think it's important, you know, as we approach Independence Day, to talk about this stuff. And on that, I will leave it to the phones. Mike in Kentucky, thanks for calling. Welcome.
I never did hear the beep. Am I on?
Nope.
Okay.
You're live.
Usually I hear that static at some point, but I was busy watching the paint dry.
We're listening to it.
Well, actually, I've done a little painting and stuff, so yes, the paint is drying. John has a long mustache. The chair is against the wall.
Right. You're gonna provoke a call by Glenn. A call from Glenn.
Anyway, part of what Trump was talking about was the swamp, this, as I've heard it, called the headless fourth branch of government. And that's what you know, I think Project Veritas got some of these guys out on dates with good-looking undercover people. And one of them in particular, I think, admitted that he would top up all his emails for his lefty political activist work that he was doing and wait until 4:35 and then hit send before he left the office. So he's working all day for these political action groups or whatever. Leftist stuff, and then they got himself fired because he got caught on tape being a little drunk or whatever, inebriated, talking about it. So that's a big part, I think, what and I misunderstood what Trump was talking about. I thought he was talking about getting rid of the people that are elected over and over and over and over and over again, you know, five terms to House or Senate. I thought that's what he was talking about with the swamp. But I have an aunt that got all over my brother. He had posted in my brother does a little bit of computer art, and he posted something about the Trump. It was a Fox News screenshot that he altered the super, the little caption at the bottom. He altered the super on it to say something silly, and my aunt attacked him and said, people just don't, they're not educated. They don't realize we have three separate branches of government and that Biden can't do anything about what the judicial branch does. And she totally didn't realize that the Department of Justice is under the executive branch. But like you're saying, you know, do we really have three separate equal branches of government anymore? It's all become this Administrative Procedure Act entrenched bureaucracy, and you were talking about Ralph Winterround, but the Aid and Abet newsletter out of Idaho, I'm trying to remember that guy's name, Sheriff Richard Mack, maybe? I don't know. Anyway, I subscribed to his Aid and Abet newsletter for law enforcement for 6 months so I could get his package deal. And, I mean, it was a manila envelope stuffed as thick as you could stuff it, and I have it somewhere in one of my briefcases. But it had photocopied police manuals from the 1940s, and
right.
This was a very coordinated conspiracy
right.
to undermine the de jure government, and Truman recognized the state of Israel, but his press secretary wrote up this press release, you know, and it was in a middle school in the 1990s, a middle school textbook, back when they still had textbooks. I saw this. I substitute taught, and I saw this in a middle school textbook. Truman marked out what the press secretary wrote, and he wrote in this government instead of the United States. And I think it originally said the United States recognizes the state of Israel's right to exist or something like that. Well, he marked out the United States, and he put this government.
Yeah.
And then he put a carrot in, and he put de facto state of Israel. And so the Supreme Court has ruled that the United States is acting as the government in fact, also known as de facto. In other words, it's not the de jure government we're supposed to have. So not a republic, even though we've got, and Kentucky still has residue of the republic. In Section 10, the first two constitutions, it was forever outside the power of government and the duped masses to alter these inalienable truths, you know, these truths that can't be destroyed. And Jefferson wrote that into the, Kentucky was originally a county of Virginia. And so when they formed Kentucky, it was formed with the same type of government as what's called the Commonwealth of Virginia. But in 1850, they changed all process and mandates from the state of Kentucky to Commonwealth of Kentucky, and they tried to change that Section 10, which is like the Bill of Rights. But they didn't have the authority to change it, because it said it's outside the scope of the government to alter plain language, bold print, you know. And
yeah.
In there's things like the right to worship your creator according to the dictates of your conscience, the right to bear arms in defense of yourself and your property. And a curious thing, that there is no law that can disparage the right to immigrate out of Kentucky. So what I think they've done across the several states, which used to be an expression in capital letters, several states, if you look back in Bouvier's and other old law dictionaries, you'll see, you know, it'll describe the dictionary as the general laws of the United States of America and the several states. Several states is a separate entity in all capital letter, or, well, capital S, you know, each word capitalized. So, in proper, you know, grammar. So, what I think they've done, they believe they've done, is that they have conned us or tricked us into immigrating out of our state. Mm-hmm. So that we're no longer a party to the state constitution.
Right.
That way they can do whatever they want
right.
with this District of Columbia
mm-hmm.
corporation that you have unwittingly contracted into or declared.
You are a citizen of the United States.
You constantly have to swear under penalty of perjury that you're a citizen of the United States. Why is that?
Yeah.
They want you, yeah, so quit doing it. And
yeah.
if there is no meeting of the minds, there's no contract, there's no, you know, under threat, duress, coercion, fraud, all of that vitiates any contract, implied or otherwise. So,
well, that's the way, you know, we used to understand it, and that's why I go back at this point to John Adams mentioning James Otis, you know, James Otis being the earliest and, what was the word that he used? I forget, John Adams, you know, James Otis was the guy. I'll pull that up in a second, but that was the point. You know, you by force or by fraud cannot be coerced, and if that was the case, then that's immediately
that's
undone.
What I say. Swear not at all. I can't swear the sun's going to come up.
Well, Jesus said
that.
I
cannot swear an oath that gets rid of these truths that are unalienable, that we are created with these born of a woman natural rights, you know, and they can try to genetically alter us or whatever and try to claim that we're patented and da-da-da, human replicants like Blade Runner, but it's a lie, and it's built on fraud. And so in my declaration, 11 pages, to the Sixth Court of Appeals in Cincinnati, the district court in Lexington wasn't listening to anything I had to say. I put in there, because all U.S. citizens basically are operating in bankruptcy as wards of the state, right? We don't have any money in circulation. You and I have never been paid any actual specie lawful money.
And again, that's why if we start talking about the full faith and credit of the American people, we've talked about this recently, if you're hypothecating currency as been done and we don't produce anything anymore, we don't manufacture anything, then basically all these people are in, you know, terms of the mindset of someone like Bill Gates, what do you call it?
The state, a drone.
Well, no, basically an expense and, you know, excess baggage.
Worthless eaters, I've heard it called.
Basically, yeah, so, you know, in that context, it's George Bernard Shaw, justify your existence and you have no justification.
Well, they wanted to do a health care system where the resources were based on a sliding scale between the ages of 15 and 55 or something. Your value to society meant that more health resources would be used on you, but before the age of 15 or after 55, well, we're going to diminish or slide the amount of resources we put into you based on your value to society. But what I was getting at, and it's case number 23-5337, I put in a paragraph that said, I have never knowingly, willingly immigrated out of Kentucky. And I specifically mentioned Section 10 or X in those constitutions that are not missing from the archives in Frankfurt. We have those with signatures. They don't have the 1850 or the 1891 constitutions. They don't have a copy of them. It's in the Citizen's Guide, which was handed to me by a conservative Democrat from the Western District of Louisville, Perry Clark, about 22 years ago. There's a section in the Citizen's Guide for the Constitution that's called The Mystery of the Missing Constitutions. And they only have a typewritten copy of the 1850. But it really doesn't matter. They did not have the lawful authority to change those constitutions. And I was born within the exterior boundaries of Kentucky. How did you con me into an unconscionable contract to let go of those rights as a natural-born man upon the soil? We've lost those phrases, and the courts don't want to deal with them.
Well, and so to that point, I mean, we can also factor in the folks who were here before, you know, the Nina Pinta and Santa Maria, and what about their, inalienable rights. So there's been intrigue from the beginning.
The United States, if they have gotten tribal recognition like the Cherokee Nation does down in North Carolina,
I would argue that tribal recognition is a variation of the 14th Amendment.
Well, but whether or not they're U.S. citizens, they are adopted by their tribe, that nation, and they're considered in the custody of the United States legally.
Right, which means that it's a derivation of the 14th Amendment. We're all equal opportunity slaves under the administrative hijinks.
If you renounce your U.S. citizenship and get some other form of passport, I mean, we've got a guy on here. What's his name? Roger Sales was on. I don't think he still has a show. But there was a couple of different guys. One of them was charging like $600 or $800.
Right.
To get a passport. Passport under the
it comes and goes. You know, it comes and goes. I'm sure you could, you know, for the last 40 years, probably, you know people, I know people. I've been in court proceedings and I've seen these things done, and it, you know, to me, it's the long game and the house always wins. It's a war of attrition. It ends up becoming an Ed and Elaine Brown situation.
Or it becomes a Churchill. It's better to fight and die than live as a slave. And if enough people do that, they get tired of killing us like they did when they adopted Christianity under Constantine. I guess they got tired of killing the Christians and said, well, gee, we could use that kind of loyalty. Let's make it the state religion.
Well, for that, you know, for that matter, when I first started talking about this administrative stuff, I would usually conclude by saying the Ninth and Tenth Amendment really spell it all out. They say it all, and if anybody approaches those, like this administrative feudalist stuff, if anybody even approaches those, they should be brought up on charges of treason immediately, and that would curb the nonsense.
And because of this surveillance state that they've built for at least the last 25 years with the help of Mossad, Barrett, Naris, Boeing, Verizon, all the Sessionizers, and X-Keyscore, and IC Reach, and all these, you know, spying stuff. He runs it down pretty quickly in an interview he did about a year ago. They've trashed our ability to have free association because we're being spied on by every which way they can. So there's the First Amendment gone. No attorney-client privilege because that's probably being spied on by any device in the room. And then, you know, so much for the Fourth Amendment, so much for the Fifth Amendment. You can't face your accuser because they're doing parallel construction, trying to keep all this a secret. So you don't face the accuser that brought this evidence, whatever it may be. You're facing a fake accuser that did parallel construction with evidence they didn't have probable cause to get in the first place for the Fourth Amendment.
Well, this, you know, that particularly reminds me of Radley Balko's series of articles on Police State America and how he, you know, there was the interstate interdiction type stuff, which, you know, you think about all of these states, the Western states in particular, that have passed the marijuana laws in contravention to the federal. And so what happens when these people cross state lines? I know stories personally of people where there's this interdiction effort going on in between states. And what ends up happening, if you read Radley Balko at all, is the state sues the property and the person is, you know, non-factor.
United States versus the property at 123 West Main Street. I've seen that in
the
newspaper.
Yeah, it's another variation of the highwayman scheme. Yeah,
the property itself is an artificial person, so they take it to court. And the alleged owner or stakeholder has to get a lawyer for the property.
Right.
But, asset forfeiture seizure sort of stuff. But, it's pretty good evidence that we don't really have a functioning government. We have some kind of oligarch. What was it Ayn Rand said? In 1960 or something, she said we're approaching the stage of the ultimate inversion, which presages the darkest periods of human history where the government can do anything and the people can only act by permission. Well, she was 20 years too late for that. It started in the late
1960s. I would say.
Yeah.
More like 100, close to. Thanks, Mike.
Bye.
Much appreciated, as always. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back after this short break.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. And one of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, sierramadreprecious metals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Welcome back. This is incredibly important stuff. Most people have no idea, but you know what? Young people are even fascinated. I've had conversations with young people, and the whole contrived version of history, which I would call revisionist history, is a yawner. That's why kids are falling asleep in history. They don't have history anymore. They have civics, or they have whatever the new thing is. But young people are interested. When you ask how many branches of government are there, if anyone can even say three, and you say actually there are four, and you start chapter and versing it, they're riveted. What? And it's fun to have those conversations with young people. But it seems the older we get and we see, you know, things the way they are, and we, you know, we are the to Brian and Jenna's, you know, nod to them. We are the formerly wild and free pigs of the Okefenokee Swamp. We are the domesticated herd animals in America these days. Don't care. You know, to Lark's point, you know, about those three words, is it ignorance or is it apathy? I don't know. I don't care. You know, so the three words are amnesia, abulia, and apathy. And so, you know. Anyway, to get back to the phones, quickly, the thought that I was thinking, the last thought, John Adams, in his series of letters to William Tudor, which I've mentioned, again, this is great fodder. This is great Independence Day fodder. Everyone should know this stuff. John Adams wrote a series of letters to William Tudor unpacking this stuff over the course of the last half of 1818, from June 1 through 1818. And he focused on James Otis and his contribution to the revolutionary period. He started the first letter, June 1, with the words, "No man could have written from memory Mr. Otis's argument of 4 or 5 hours. Can you imagine defending the Boston merchants? Mr. Otis's argument of 4 or 5 hours against the acts of trade as revenue laws and against writs of assistance as tyrannical engines to execute them the next day after it was spoken. How awkward then it would be, an attempt to do it after a lapse of 57 years. So, you know, he goes on to say, "Nevertheless, some of the heads of this discourse are so indelibly imprinted on my mind that I will endeavor to give you some very short hints of them." So he's talking about something that happened in 1761, basically, recalling from memory 57 years later, which I think is remarkable. So from that, you know, and again, the phrase that I was thinking of that I couldn't, the word was principle. So Adams concludes that letter, the first letter, by writing, "I shall pursue this subject in a short series of letters. Providence pursues its incomprehensible and inscrutable designs in its own way and by its own instruments. And as I sincerely believe Mr. Otis to have been the earliest and principal founder of one of the greatest political revolutions that ever occurred among men," that's quite a statement, "it seems to me of some importance that his name and character should not be forgotten." So have we remembered Mr. Otis? Anyway, backing up, the heads or the hints of these heads of his discourse included in short, Otis sported upon this topic with, well, that man's right to his life, his liberty, no created being could rightfully contest, nor was his right to his property less incontestable. I think there's a biblical support for these ideas. Anyway, Adams says, "In short, he sported upon this topic with so much wit and humor, and at the same time so much indisputable truth and reason, that he was not less entertaining than instructive." And so this is, I think, one of the big reasons why Otis is forgotten, rights of property. Continuing, "He asserted that these rights were inherent and inalienable, that they never could be surrendered or alienated but by idiots or madmen, and all the acts of idiots and lunatics were void and not obligatory by all the laws of God and man. Nor were the poor Negroes forgotten. Not a Quaker in Philadelphia or Mr. Jefferson of Virginia ever asserted the rights of Negroes in stronger terms. Young as I was and ignorant as I was, I shuddered at the doctrine he taught, and I have all my lifetime shuddered and still shudder at the consequences that may be drawn from such premises. Shall we say that the rights of masters and servants clash and can be decided only by force? And then he concludes that thought with, I adore the idea of gradual abolitions, but who shall decide how fast or how slowly these abolitions shall be made? Final thought on this stuff, and back to the phones. In what Mike was saying, I just kept thinking of the book of Joshua and the end of Joshua, and Joshua saying, choose ye this day whom you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And it's interesting, you read Joshua 24. I humorously refer to it as the first takeaway close. He says, you guys can't do it. You probably can't do it. It's too hard. And they say, no, we will do it. We will serve the Lord. And then he says, well, you guys are a witness against yourselves. And it went well. But today we've lost sight of that. And again, it's back to Charles Baudelaire. And the finest trick of the devil is persuading you that he does not exist. So there's no choice to be made. Nah, there's still a choice to be made. Anyway, back to the phones. Patrick in Texas, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, John F. Kennedy, man, that was so real. It's just like today. You saw Mike in Kentucky was saying that they get us through these through some consent, but here's page 97. These corporate laws and regulations are called statutes, and their effect and control over human beings is deceptively obtained by consent through civil contracts. Every time you apply for a license, every time
page
you get a marriage.
Page 97 of what?
List. It's the Great American Adventure by Judge Dale.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, he's a retired federal judge. He's been there, done that. I talked to Michael Gaddy about some of this stuff, and for some reason he does not seem to comprehend the corporate structure that we have evolved into. And he doesn't even understand. He thinks there's just one constitution, but he's always just mentioning the missing other constitutions. It's like they had one in the Sam Houston Library in Texas, and then all of a sudden it's gone. They had one in D.C. It was called a document under glass. That disappeared too roughly at the same time. Yeah, of course, the 13th Amendment. They're changing everything all the time. And they got their people out there selling this stuff to
us.
Well,
for that matter, what about the journey by, the law that never was by Beckman and Benson?
I don't know that one. The journey is like the road to serfdom, probably something like that.
Basically, they proved that the 16th Amendment was never properly ratified by going to the states themselves and investigating the archives.
Okay. That's the 14th, and so on and so forth. It was never ratified.
Mm-hmm.
13th
yeah.
was.
Yep.
That was one of the first things they went after. It was the TONA, Titles of Nobility Act. It's like, you talk about these different corporations. People don't understand. Just like a U.S. citizen, those slick little names, they have meaning. For example, you have three different titles for Texas. You got Texas State, the State of Texas, and you got Texas. Only one is the real thing. The other one is corporations. And they're doing the same thing with the federal government. The U.S. government, they stole that. They started calling themselves the Union. The Union. They're not the Union. There was a federal territorial corporation, 19 enumerated powers. And we reserved that, but that's another story. But that's one of the big things they stole right off the top of the pile there. They call themselves the Union. The Union is the soil jurisdiction. And then you have the Federation, not the federal, the Federation. that's your land that goes out into the 50 miles out on shore, offshore, you know, and that was how we traded, you know, internationally, you know, and then we built the Confederacy, or Confederacy corporations, and that was what. So, but they got all screwed up. They started calling everybody, "Yo, you're a Confederate," you know, and all that. They didn't realize how this thing's built, you know, and then so. Yeah, you know, and then you got the Republic. The Republic comes under the Confederacy. Nobody gets that, you know. And everything, including Michael Gaddy, is in everything is the Constitution, 1989. That's, you know, a priori. That's nothing more. No, it's very complicated. And but trying to find this stuff, very difficult. They're destroying documents left and right. And you know, and all your things you're archiving on YouTube and stuff is being just disappearing. But yeah, Sir Edmund Burke said, you know, learning without reflection is like eating without digestion. It's good you're talking about it. I'll drop it at that. But yeah, we got to, don't let this die, man, because it's just giving the whole damn thing. Yeah. Take care.
Thank you, Patrick. Much appreciated, as always. Real quick, couple of things before we go back to the phones. So, in Jefferson's letter to William Branch, Giles, in it was December 26, 1825, Jefferson writes, "You asked my opinion of the propriety of giving publicity to what is stated in your letter as having passed between Mr. John Q. Adams and yourself, etc., etc., etc." There's a story here you got to read, but anyway, he writes, "I doubt whether a single fact known to the world will carry as clear a conviction to it of the correctness of our knowledge of the treasonable views of the federal party of that day as that disclosed by the most nefarious and daring attempt to dissever the Union, capital U, of which the Hartford Convention was a subsequent chapter. And both of these having failed, consolidation becomes the fourth chapter of this next book of their history. But this opens with a vast accession of strength from their younger recruits, who having nothing in them of the feelings or principles of 76, now look to a single and splendid government of an aristocracy." What did James Madison say about that? All the powers, et cetera, et cetera. "Founded on banking institutions and moneyed in corporations under the guise and cloak of their favored branches of manufactures, commerce, and navigation, riding and ruling over the plundered plowman and beggared yeomanry. This will be to them a next best blessing to the monarchy of their first aim and perhaps the surest stepping stone to it." I think of that, and I think of Andrew Jackson's 1837 farewell address, when he said, "The mischief springs from the power which the moneyed interest derives from a paper currency." This is basically a self-educated guy. "Derives from a paper currency which they are able to control from the multitude of corporations with exclusive privileges which they have succeeded in obtaining in the different states and which are employed altogether for their benefit. And unless you become more watchful in your states and check this spirit of monopoly and thirst for exclusive privileges, you will in the end find that the most important powers of government have been given or bartered away, and the control over your dearest interests has passed into the hands of these corporations." Back to the phones. James in Vancouver, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning. It's
morning.
It's a solid gold Independence weekend. KMON, come on, radio. Great Falls, Montana, 50,000 watts.
Yeah.
I used to listen to that when I was a child back in 1960. You know that radio station.
I'm familiar, yeah.
How far? Are you close to Great Falls or far away? Or?
Closer, far in Montana is it's relative terminology. Not really close. Not terribly close.
Okay. Well, you know, crossing the border down, if we were in Williston and couldn't get any beer, just hightail it across the Montana border and you could get all you wanted. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been listening to this, of course, discussion for a while, and you have to make sure your client signs a waiver when you take them to court and say that I know that this judge is a communist. And that I know I'm going to lose this case, and I absolve my lawyer of any liability. Excuse me. A benchmark, if you want, up here in the greater Vancouver area, all the public libraries, and there are quite a few of them, have thrown out their political philosophy books and their philosophy books. They're all gone.
Yeah.
Maybe I mentioned that before. I can't remember. So
maybe. I don't remember either. Sounds familiar, though.
Okay, right. Well, you see, they don't want us thinking. They don't want the students thinking. And there's more I was going to say. The Kennedy speech just now. You mm-hmm. know, Joe Rogan played that for Alex Jones when Alex was doing a Joe Rogan show after he got kicked off internet in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
An old... Alex Jones' baby said that Kennedy was referring to communism, but actually, that's all about the CIA.
Yeah.
That whole speech, if you listen to it.
I would say it's both, and it's, you know, it's the octopus that Danny Casolaro talked about, or, you know, Hydra. It's the thing that runs the CIA and employs communism.
The high levels of the CIA were buddies with the high levels on the communist side, I'm
mm-hmm.
sure.
Yeah.
And
Bella Dodd.
Secret agent.
Yeah, Bella Dodd told us that in plain language, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because they're getting their money from the same banks.
Yeah.
Back to Davey.
Yeah.
Back to Davey. You said he could land in Russia and China anytime he wanted, right?
Yeah, yep. Oh, that was according to the New York Times, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
if people go read David Rockefeller's obituary in the New York Times, if you're really reading it, then you should kind of be, you know, asking some serious questions. What the heck, man?
Yes. Well, people are talking about Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s run for the presidency, and I think I was going to mention this on another program yesterday, but I didn't get the time, is what that will do, or what that is actually a teaching process for the American people. Whether he wins or not,
mm-hmm.
of course, is another issue, but actually the fact that he's running is actually teaching everybody history and teaching everybody some principles, so in that sense, it's a positive thing.
Agreed. Definitely.
So, well, anyway, I'll let you go, and hopefully we can hash it out on another show, maybe Monday. You're in Monday?
Yes. Yeah, I think that we'll try to do something particularly patriotic, maybe. I mean, this has been sort of a hint at that.
Yeah. But well, yeah. I can whistle some revolutionary songs there for you.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll let you maybe go. Thanks, Chris.
Maybe we'll play O Canada for our brothers to the north.
Well, maybe we can play Dixie, or maybe we can, you know, some kind of Southern.
Oh, we can like find Leonard some fun Skinner. Stuff, definitely.
Leonard, and remember, right, here's the deal. If you want to get free, is get that 69 Chevelle with a 396 four-speed. Get in that sucker and just... give her down the highway.
It'll absolutely. Or maybe back a couple of years with no side markers on the back, or absolutely.
Right. Well, if I get to Montana, definitely we're going to do that.
Sounds good. We should organize something like that because there are,
Hey, that's a good idea. A road rally for something. Yeah, that's a perfect idea.
We could do our own Y-to-Y initiative, kind of. We could do Yukon to Yellowstone and all the way down to Round Rock.
You see, and we don't even have to have the banners. The cars will speak for themselves, right?
Yeah.
We can talk politics and say, I was going to say that Tesla, that battery in that thing is 2 tons, am I right?
Yeah.
That's like riding on an atomic bomb if that lithium decides to fuse or something like that, right?
One of the things that I despise most these days is the sound of those electric cars. It just sounds like – it sounds eerie. It sounds like it just reminds me of some kind of a demonic kind of a shriek type thing. There's a word I can't think of it. And so I was thinking of that the other day. I can't stand that sound. It's just terrible. And mostly because of what it represents, but
yeah. Well, it's seriously, if that thing is got all that backdoor stuff built into it and they can start that battery on fire.
Yeah.
That's going to be serious.
Yikes.
All righty.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Much appreciated.
All right. Good talking to you. All right.
As always. All right. I don't like that sound. I don't like the sound of those electric vehicles or the hybrids either. One of the things that I appreciate most in life, though, is the fact that my mom doesn't listen to she's not one of those teeny bopper music listening grandmothers. She's an age-appropriate lady who's not dressing like a 14-year-old. That seems to be a weird thing in America these days, too. I don't know if that fits with the patriotic theme, but that was just a thing in my head. Back to the phones, quickly. Tom in Utah, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Curiously, as an amendment to what you and Mike were talking about earlier with the jurisdiction of the federal government, in 2009, when I got involved with this case with a baby that was near death, that's the story in GassingAmerica.com, or a.k.a. Poisoning the Poor. I ran headlong into the federal government. Mm-hmm. Most people, and I did not know at the time, that a tenth of the nation live literally by default in the District of Columbia.
Yeah.
How's that? Every manufactured a mobile home in America since 1976 literally is the regulatory responsibility of HUD, and the fact is that they had actually decided to, cause injury or premature death to the people inside. When I identified that issue and I took it to D.C., I'm going to tell you, I became a persona non grata as I was exposing the fact that the federal government was mandating that the industry violate health and safety code, as you can see in that. So in Gassing America, you might... particularly the people listening that are living in mobile homes, they need to find out that they're living in Washington, D.C. by default. And the city, county, and state have no jurisdiction inside that unit.
Yep. That's a fun fact, for sure. Thank you, Tom. Much appreciated. Folks, that'll do it. I hope you have a great weekend. Remember, we're not live on Independence Day this year, but we'll be back on Monday, so... have a great weekend. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea.
The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.